right, welcome back to episode 4 of the Sideline Sessions with Wesley Sykes. I am, of course, Wesley Sykes, a managing editor of Coach and Athletic Director, Training and Conditioning, and Winning Hoops Brands for Great American Media Services. And you can listen to our previous episodes with Aaron Struthers, assistant men's basketball coach for UMass Dartmouth, or the NFHS executive director, Dr. Carissa Neoff, or coach in the Colorado Rockies organization, Jerry Weinstein. Anywhere you can access podcasts, as well as any of our websites, coachad.com, training-conditioning.com, and winninghoops.com. And also, be sure to follow our brands on Twitter, at coach_AD, at train_condition, and at winninghoops, as well as myself, if you like, at Wesley_Sykes. But on to more pertinent news. Today, we welcome to the program a dietitian and nutritionist for the Dallas Cowboys and the Texas Rangers, among many others, Amy Goodson. Thanks so much for taking the time out to join us today. Amy, how are you?
I am doing great. Thank you. And yes, I've worked with a slew of them. I don't work with those guys now, but I spent 4.5 years with the Dallas Cowboys and over 6 years with the Texas Rangers, as well as over 10 in college sports. So a lot of sports nutrition in my life.
Yeah, and it kind of runs the whole gamut too, right? I saw Texas Christian University in there as well as some Major League Soccer pro teams, affiliate teams with them as well in the Dallas area.
You know, I like to say I've worked peewee to pro. So I've had a fortunate opportunity to work at a sports medicine facility. I own my own business now, but I worked there for over 10 years. And so as a part of that, I worked for TCU Athletics. We did a lot in Major League Soccer. My first professional athletes to ever work with were actually PGA Tour players. Still work with one regularly now. And then, yes, anywhere from professional baseball to professional football, and then as well as the everyday, you know, the exercising population, youth athletes, which I live in Dallas, Texas. So That is a huge area of youth sports and kids that are really trying to perform at their optimal level. And so a lot of them are reaching out to dietitians now to try to take their game to another level when many of their, you know, local other kids playing in sports may not necessarily be doing that, trying to get an edge.
And now you have a new book as well, pretty recent as well, right? Sports Nutrition Playbook. Can you tell us a little bit about that and maybe where some people can find that if they're interested?
Yes. So the Sports Nutrition Playbook came out in August, and I really developed this in relationship to sports nutrition, of course, but then being asked for years and years and years by coaches, athletes, back to the youth population, parents and youth coaches saying, we need a resource that can be easy to understand, that's practical. We don't have time to read a 300-page book. And so what can you give us? And so I actually came up with this idea in 2013. I got busy and it took until 2020 to do it. And I said, you know, if I don't walk out of COVID without this book, there is something wrong with me. So really dialed in. And while it applies to all athletes, it's 250 pages, but it's in a little flip book style. So it's on a little ring, about 4.5 by 5.5 inches. So it's designed to be bulletproof, you know, just like lots of bullet points, lots of charts, lots of examples, so that someone could look at it very easily and say, oh, okay, I need a post-workout snack, here's 10 of them. Or I need a pre-workout snack, here's 10. Here's 10 energy bite recipes. So really designed to make sports nutrition easy, I would say, for the athlete, the parent, the coach, the trainer, because especially at younger ages, many of those coaches and trainers, they're the ones doing it all, right? They're the nutritionist, they're the, you know, the coach, they're doing so many things. And I find from public speaking at all sorts of conferences and events that they really want information, but they don't always know where to access it and how to find it. So enter the Sports Nutrition Playbook. And I've had some great comments from strength coaches and athletic trainers. And they're like, this is it. It's so easy to understand, which was my goal. So you can actually find it at my website, which is amygoodsonrd.com. And there's a little shop tab and it will take you to the Sports Nutrition Playbook. And I actually spent some time during COVID as well, doing some sports nutrition videos. So many teams and coaches and trainers would like to bring a sports dietitian to their school to meet with their kids. And either they can't afford it, they don't have someone local, they don't know where to reach out to. So did 4 like 20-minute videos that can easily be used by teams and coaches where that they can educate their athletes, their parents, et cetera. So really trying to fill the gap for that age group that may not always have access to a sports dietitian to help them with their performance.
Awesome. That's great. And I this is the writer and corny joke maker in me here, but when you said try to make it as easy as possible, my mind immediately went to try to make it as digestible, right? The whole book is digestible there.
Yes, as digestible as possible. Because the reality is that you have a parent and they have three kids that play sports. So they don't have time to read a 300-page book of paragraphs. They want to know when they're in the drive-through in between, you know, soccer and baseball practice, what they're supposed to feed their kid. And is it okay to give them a sports drink? Those are the things that parents want to know and coaches want to know. So trying to make that as easy as possible. Many times I think people think nutrition is difficult to understand. It's so complex. There's a lot of misinformation out there. And so many are trying to find like, what is the right thing? Because they want to do the right thing for their athletes, for their kids, whoever that is.
Well, it is the holiday season. So now might be a good time to, you know, fill out those stocking stuffers or cross off any early Christmas list gifts there. But again, I think the timing of this is very important as we kind of head towards the winter and colder months here for the majority of the country, maybe not so much in Texas. But, you know, as colds and flu season starts to ramp up, and of course, with COVID on everyone's mind here, I think it's important to bring on someone who can maybe help give advice on how to stay healthy and keep that body and that immune system strong throughout the month. So my first question is can maintaining a well-balanced, healthy diet, you know, help fighting off colds, help build up your immune system?
The answer is yes, in its smallest form. I've actually done a lot of presentations on this topic in the last few months. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about strengthening the immune system, I always like to tell people, it's not necessarily that eating a certain food is going to boost it and make you never get a cold.
Sure.
The goal is to keep that immune system strong. And you can do that by eating nutrient-rich foods that provide those vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, all of the things that we are looking for that the body needs. And so many people don't even know what like an antioxidant is. So the way I like to describe it to people is an antioxidant is the good guy and it fights and buffers the bad guy in its most simplest form. And so if we have more of those vitamins and minerals and antioxidants, we're going to be able to buffer more of the bad guys or germs, bacteria, viruses, et cetera. And while lots of people go run to a supplement store, you really can find a lot of what you need in the produce section. So, you know, we think of vitamin C, we think of an orange or orange juice. A lot of people don't know that red and green bell peppers are a phenomenal source of vitamin C. You can find them in cherries, strawberries, kiwi, tomatoes, and tomato sauces. These are some foods that people are eating on a regular basis, and they can incorporate them into different meals and snacks, as well as some of those other antioxidant-rich foods. So I mentioned tart cherries, which are really popular in the sports nutrition world for decreasing inflammation, but they have a, ready for your science word, anthocyanins, which is an antioxidant that's very strong and can help fight off those diseases, illnesses, those types of things. So you're really looking for those colorful, nutrient-rich foods. Typically, when you think of fruits and vegetables, each color packs a different nutrient group. So that could be vitamin C, that could be the anthocyanins, the antioxidant. You know, all your orange and yellow fruits and vegetables pack beta carotene, which is a very strong antioxidant. So when you hear that, like, eat the colors of the rainbow or eat all your fruits and vegetables, there's legit science behind why you should be doing that. And a lot of that is to provide your body with what it needs to stay strong, to fight off any bacteria, viruses, et cetera, that might be coming your way, especially in the winter months when flu season is rampant.
You know, it's so funny. I'm a New Englander here, based out of Massachusetts. So when you hear things like different shades and different colors of fruits, my mind immediately goes to Tom Brady, of course, his TB12 method and Alex Guerrero and everything. But you know, he was big on staying away from nightshade fruits nightshade fruits and vegetables. So what is that? Your tomatoes, your strawberries, those type of things.
There's not a lot of great science behind that. There is some trend behind it. And I'm going to say that we know only 1 in 10 people get the adequate and the recommended amount of fruits and vegetables. So I'm going to tell you, eat them all. They are all good for you. There is some real trendy information out there, but when you look at the science behind it, it's not there. A tomato is going to have usually about 3 times the vitamin C as an orange. It's got lycopene, which is a very strong antioxidant. We know that it's also plays a role in fighting off cancers. There's a variety of other nutrients in it as well. So I'm going to say if it's a fruit or it's a vegetable, eat it. I don't care if it is frozen, if it's fresh, if it's sauteed, if it's organic, if it's conventional, eat it, because that's really going to be what you need to help keep that immune system strong and just give you the vitamins and minerals. I always say vitamins and minerals are kind of like the behind the scenes guys of like a big concert or a sporting event. Like, you don't realize they're there, but if they weren't there, the whole show would fall apart. That's basically what vitamins and minerals do in your body, and they play vital roles. You don't need them in excessive quantities, but they're essential. And fruits and vegetables, your other nutrient-rich foods like whole grains and dairy and healthy fats and all of those things are going to help you get in those vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients that you need.
Well, and staying on the topic of just kind of the season and the flu season and kind of, you know, boosting that immune system, I had read somewhere over, you know, the course of the last week or so that a study that said 75% of Americans are chronically dehydrated. Now, I think this was a 2015 study. It might have been a smaller sample size from what I was reading, but you know, we hear coaches, trainers, everybody, you name it, kind of harp on the need to continually hydrate. And why do you think it's important to consume so many liquids regularly, maybe in this time of the year specifically?
So our bodies are made of 60 to 80% water. When we're younger, it's at the higher end of that. As we get older, it's kind of on the lower end, closer to 60%. So we need fluid on a regular basis. Dehydration can cause a lot of negative things for anybody. So it can cause headaches, fatigue, nauseousness for some people, you know, just overall not feeling really well. When we talk about it in the space of exercisers and athletes, not just elite athletes, but exercisers, it becomes very important because we know that about a 2% level of dehydration in the body equates to about a 10% decrease in performance.
Oh,
and
wow.
As dehydration gets worse, performance declines. And, you know, I always tell all exercisers and athletes, hydration is something you can control. There's a lot of things in the world that you can't control, specifically in sports. There's a ton of stuff you can't control. So why wouldn't you try to control what you can? And that's getting water, and it's actually fluid intake. So that fluid could come from a smoothie. It could come from chocolate milk. It could come from unsweet tea, water, a sports drink if you're an athlete and you're at practice. So there's a variety of fluids that you can consume to help contribute to your daily needs. But we know too, you mentioned COVID. So when we think about the flu and COVID, things of that nature, people are oftentimes more dehydrated in the cold months. People often don't drink as much. And that can contribute to, I would say, exacerbating those symptoms. So they could make you feel worse, you know, magnify a headache, magnify how you might feel. So trying to stay on top of that hydration, you know, I took fruits and vegetables, as I mentioned, they also have a high water content. During the winter, soup is a great way to get hydration in. So there are some other things that you can do outside of just drinking water. We want people to do that. But outside of that, to help get in your fluid intake so that you don't suffer from any of those other symptoms that I mentioned.
And I think that's a great point too, because, you know, in the warmer months, you're hot, you know, you're going to be more inclined to drink water anyway, but you're cold, you're not going to be necessarily want to drink cold water. That's funny kind of how the mind kind of plays a trick on you like that. Cause I definitely find that to be the case in the winter months, that I'm just not reaching for water as much as I would be in, you know, July, August or so. But can we ever confuse thirst with hunger over the course of the day, maybe generally speaking? I know this is something my wife has kind of said to me, she's very big into the fitness and health world. Is that like an old wives' tale, or is there some actual science behind that?
Yeah, I mean, I hear that a lot. I don't know that I've seen a ton of research studies that shows that, but oftentimes, you know, you think of if you drink a bottle of water, you typically feel kind of full, right? And, you know, we'll tell people that are trying to lose weight, drink a glass of water before you eat a meal because it can help you feel more full. So there is, I think, some quality to oftentimes people are reaching for, you know, a pick me up, or they might be reaching for a snack when they probably should be making sure that they're hydrated first. So you want to listen to those hunger and fullness cues, but I would say also just putting an extra emphasis on hydration, getting that in so that you aren't just thirsty and reaching for something else that might be more caloric or maybe less optimally good for you.
All right. Well, that's good to know here. And I guess that generally, I guess that would kind of make sense, right? You can last longer between meals than you can without water or without fluid. So generally, I think maybe you are more thirsty than you are hungry.
And if you think about it, if you're dehydrated, oftentimes that can cause fatigue and making you not feel really great. Well, oftentimes if you're tired, don't feel really great, have a headache, what do you reach for? Food.
Right.
You reach for something to pay. So trying to balance out and making sure you're getting enough hydration is important, especially, you know, if you're at home a lot or whatnot. Like sometimes people forget if they're at an office or in a business, they might be able to, okay, I drink my water here, drink my water, keep my glass here. So it's just being mindful of making sure that you're getting in. I tell everyone, use the old school rule of thumb that we teach young athletes. Use the color of your urine. So pale yellow to clear typically indicates hydration. Apple juice and darker, no good. You need to go find some more fluid. So if you exercise a lot or you've been sweating a lot, you know, in the morning, you're going to be more dehydrated. So these are times to pay attention to making sure you're getting in enough fluid just in case, where you may not necessarily. Cold months as well.
And now you previously touched on speaking on some trends within the diet world. Something I see a lot with professional athletes is the turn to vegan or plant-based diets. And a lot of them are kind of singing the praises of this change. You know, in your opinion, what are the advantages of a vegan or plant-based diet for athletes? And then maybe what are some disadvantages of not having meat in your diet and how you go about supplementing that?
So we want all people to eat more plants in general. As I said, 1 in 10 people get the recommended amount of fruits and vegetables. So relatively speaking, everyone needs to eat more plants.
Sure, absolutely.
There's a big trend in various sports really over the past few years to get in, you know, whether it's a plant-based diet or a vegan diet or whatnot. You know, I think that they are obviously providing you with tons of vitamins and minerals so they can help you feel better. Many professional athletes are going from fast food and French fries to like sweet potatoes, kale, and all of these things. I'm like, well, of course you're going to feel better. I just sat on a webinar the other day with a retired NFL player and he's like, I felt so much better. And I'm like, I have seen what you people eat. Of course you felt better on that. So can you eat a vegan or plant-based diet and get what you need? Yes. I will say that you have to be more strategic with your protein intake. So especially if you're a very active person or an athlete, your protein needs are higher than the person that is not as active as you are. So we base that on weight and what type of sport or what type of athlete you are, what type of exerciser you are. So for vegetarian, plant-based, and vegan individuals, they need to be a lot more strategic. It takes more effort because we know plant protein isn't quite as digestible or absorbable as animal protein. You get about 85% of your plant protein when you eat it. You get about 95% of it when you're eating it from animal protein. And when we look at some of our plant protein foods like beans and lentils, well, they're a carbohydrate and a protein. Look at your nuts and seeds and nut butters. Well, they're a fat with some protein in them. So you oftentimes have to make sure you're balancing out the appropriate amount of calories. So I always tell people that with plant-based foods, you typically get less grams of protein per bite than you would with an animal-based food. So you typically just have to pay a little more attention to it, be a little more strategic. When we talk about high quality protein, so another science lesson, a high quality protein means that it gives you all 9 essential amino acids that your body cannot make. Most plant foods, except for soy foods, quinoa, and hemp seeds, are what we call an incomplete protein, meaning they have some of the essential amino acids, not all of them. So it becomes important to eat a variety of plant-based proteins. From an animal standpoint, of course, we're recommending that when people are eating animal proteins that they're eating lean proteins and whatnot. But, you know, high quality protein, whether it's from dairy, chicken, fish, beef, et cetera, that can add a lot of benefit to the diet. So like if I look at beef, beef is like the only protein that provides 10 essential nutrients. Well, that doesn't mean go eat a 20-ounce ribeye, but it can mean eat a 4-ounce filet. So a lot of that is balancing it out. Some of vegan and vegetarianism is personal preference for whatever reason. So there is sure a benefit from adding lots of plant-based foods. So a lot of, I would say, a trend and something in the dietitian world that we are trying to push is think of a plant-focused diet. So your diet is highly focused on whole grains and fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, while also including some really high quality protein. And so that's where you can find a balance. But again, you can do it either way. The key becomes your preference and making sure that you are getting in what you need if you choose to eliminate an entire food group.
Now, and I think the concern among, particularly among like football fans, per se, when you talk about, you know, NFL athletes who go to a plant-based diet or vegan diet, or even other combat sports or collision type sports like that, is they might lose that little extra power And is that something that's real, or is that something that you can supplement again, just with a higher take of protein or getting more of the right high powered proteins?
So for elite athletes, if they choose to go plant-based or vegan, oftentimes by default, they just don't get enough protein in unless they have probably a dietitian sitting there helping. The athlete I listened to the other day, he said, I initially lost weight because I was losing muscle mass and I lost some of my strength. So I had to be educated to make sure I was getting enough grams of protein to build my strength back up. So, you know, protein is protein. Like when it gets into your body, it's amino acids. There's no, you know, little bodyguard saying you came from beef, go over there. Oh, you came from lentils, go over there. So it's amino acids. So it becomes, are you getting enough protein and amino acids to support the level of activity that you're doing and the muscle mass that you have? And if you are doing that strategically, then no matter where you're choosing your protein sources from, you should be able to maximize power and strength. The key is making sure you're getting enough to meet your requirements.
Now, I want to shift topics here. This is maybe more of a personal question here that I would like to get cleared up. But can you explain the assault on the milk industry recently? I know my wife has really said that, you know, it's kind of shifted to almond milk, soy milk. Some of my friends who are, you know, personal trainers, strength trainers, you know, kind of say the same thing. But this Milk Does a Body Good campaign, it's kind of been mislabeled is what they'll tell. Is this just a conspiracy theory? Can you clear this up for me at all? Is it okay if I drink milk still?
So based on science, I will tell you that it's a conspiracy theory, talking to a girl who eats cheese every day of her life and puts real milk in her coffee every day of her life. So there is a lot of confusion. And I think it's important to note that when we look at what is coming out in the news or in a magazine or what your favorite Instagram star put out, just because they're saying it's true or they believe it to be true doesn't mean that it is. And unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation out there. So when we talk about cow's milk, so dairy milk, milk, again, provides 9 essential nutrients. So it provides protein. You get other nutrients like calcium, vitamin D, B vitamins. And really, milk and milk products are the main providers of calcium and vitamin D in the diet. So people will say, I'm going to get my calcium from broccoli. I'm like, congratulations, you need to eat 22 cups of it to get the same amount that you would get in 3 servings of, you know, 3 glasses of milk. And so when we look at the actual research and the actual science, we know that it's nutrient rich. From an affordability standpoint, milk is one of the most affordable foods for the nutrition that it provides, which is very important. You know, I live in a big city. That may not always be the case, but there are lots of people out there that are, especially right now during COVID, that are looking for affordable, nutrient-rich options to feed their family.
Right.
There is some also confusion in that space around, you know, antibiotics and all of these different, you know, hormones or whatever that is. And so what's interesting is milk is actually tested 9 times from the farm to the grocery store. So it's actually considered the safest food in a grocery store because it's tested. And so there's a lot of talks like, oh, there's antibiotics or whatever that is. So if a cow is sick, basically what happens is they treat that cow with antibiotics, just like you would treat your child with antibiotics if they were sick. They band their feet with a red marker band. And so basically after they clear their, you know, time that they have to take their antibiotics, they have, and for different farms, it's different. I'm by no means a farmer, but they have to basically be milked and discard the milk for a variety of days till there is zero residue in that milk before a cow can go back into a milking line. So if a trucker full of milk is ever caught with any strand of antibiotics, that entire trucker is dumped and that farm has to pay for it. So there are serious repercussions to not following that. So, you know, when you look at some of that information that's out there, you know, there's hormones. And I was like, hello, it's an animal. There's hormones in plants. People don't realize that, but there is. So they're not adding these extra things. And so that's where I think some of the confusion comes in. And so it really boils down to looking at the science and looking at, like, this is considered one of the most nutrient-rich foods and really one of the safest foods that's out there. Of course, there could always be an exception to one farm or one whatever, but typically it's, I would say, it's the opposite, and it's a super nutrient-rich food. And, you know, like, speaking, we were talking about youth sports. Okay, like chocolate milk, that's in their school cafeteria. They can run and go get that for a very, very inexpensive cost, and it's going to provide them with 8 grams of protein for 8 ounces and a variety of nutrients that they might have to eat a variety of other foods that they would get just simply comparing that to 8 ounces of milk.
Yeah. And have you ever tried to have cereal with almond milk or soy milk before? It's, you know, I need the thickness of at least 1% milk in there. It just doesn't have the same consistency.
Well, and let's also clear up that there is a huge misconception that like almond milk and rice milk and hemp milk and all of these milk, coconut milk have protein in them. They by default do not. And so most of them have 0 or 1 grams. Now there are some that are fortified with like pea protein or other proteins, but most of them are actually lower in protein. Soy would be the only difference. It's not quite as high as milk, but it has 6 grams per 8 ounces. Milk, cow's milk has 8 grams per 8 ounces. And what's interesting is so many people think almond milk is so much less processed. I mean, there's typically like 15 ingredients in plain almond milk. You add a silk to that, you're going up to like 21 ingredients and you're paying way more money for it. So what's interesting is I'm like, okay, if you want the benefit of almond, I would eat almonds. There's only 6 almonds in a glass of almond milk. So like eat almonds, eat coconut. If you just love almond milk, fine. You can drink that as a beverage. The key is not confusing that thinking you're getting the same nutrition as what you would be getting in cow's milk. So the word milk is confusing. A lot of people will say, you know, it's an alternative. Well, an alternative means it provides you the same thing. That's inaccurate. So you just need to make sure that if you are choosing, you know, a milk or quote unquote milk, that's not a cow's milk, that you're getting those other nutrients from other places.
That's great. I'm going to clip this part of the podcast. We can end it right now. I'm going to send it to my friends, send it to my wife, and then I'm going to have myself a good weekend here. So thank you. I'm glad we're on the same side of thinking on that. I've also realized in some of the research that you're a big proponent of meal prepping. And what are some, let me see here. Where was I here? What are some tips and tricks maybe for people who are maybe just starting out in meal prepping, or what are some advantages of that, particularly for athletes, right, who maybe have a chock full schedule?
Yeah, so meal prepping and meal planning can really make your week a lot easier, right? Because the goal is for people, if you have more healthy options available, people usually choose healthy options. If you don't have them available, they may not. And so, you know, this doesn't mean you have to spend, you know, 10 hours on Sunday in a kitchen, but some easy things that I'll tell people, you know, is, you know, can you batch cook vegetables? So for instance, you can roast vegetables and they will hold for a whole week in an airtight container. So throw every vegetable your family likes on a massive cooking sheet, pop them in the oven for 40 minutes on Sunday, put them in an airtight container. You can add vegetables to all of your meals. You never have to make them again. Or like I like to talk about, like if we're talking about proteins, could you, if you're grilling chicken, could you grill a variety of them, put them in the fridge? You know, ground meat can go into a pasta. It can go into a bowl. It can go into egg cups. So cooking one protein that might be able to be used in a variety of different options, you know, for your meal choices during the week. And then even some simple things like take a few minutes, snack baggy your almonds, snack baggy your grapes, snack baggy your cheese. It's going to make that an easier choice during the week. So it's not that you have to bust out and be Martha Stewart in the kitchen, but some simple things like that can actually help make that healthier choice easier. And so just thinking in advance, what am I going to have? Like I do a lot of video and TV content for different brands, and egg cups are like my go-to.
So I love those.
You can put vegetables. Who else is going to get vegetables? We know protein is one of the hardest things for people to get in the morning if they're in a hurry. Well, in a little egg cup, you can get protein and vegetables. All you have to do is heat them up. So again, I mean, they literally take no time to mix up. You cook them for 20 minutes, you're good to go. They'll hold for a week in the fridge. So that can be a great option for getting a quick protein. So it's thinking through some of those and planning in advance a little bit and thinking, what am I going to have available and how could I make this easier so that healthy food is what I reach for during the week?
Yeah. And I think your note about those kind of one sheet, one sheet dinners, one sheet pans make everything so much easier. You know, you throw them on a couple big cookie cutter, you know, cookie sheets and throw them in the oven. It makes it a whole less daunting of a task. And I can speak from personal experience, just being able to pack an apple or a bag of almonds or something for a snack makes me far less likely to jump over to the 7-Eleven and buy you know, a protein bar or something, which kind of leads into my next question, is that so many things get labeled as protein bars or healthy snacks or things like that. And, you know, for people who are getting involved into more health conscious decisions when it comes to them eating, you know, how do you discern between what's a good marketing advertising campaign and what is really healthy for you?
So I always tell people, try to eat a whole food where you can. The reality is that's not always an option. I know we're all spending lots of time at home right now, but on the regular, I usually travel 70% of the time. You cannot always choose a whole food when you are on the go. So I think trying to choose whole foods where you can to get more fiber, more nutrients, more protein. When we start talking about packaged foods, I think you want to look for a few things. So you mentioned like protein bars. So I'm always looking for, is there fiber in there? Obviously, is there protein? Is it lower in added sugars? And I would love to tell you there's one formula to look at any ingredient list, but typically there's not, because it really depends on the food. And so saying, okay, is this, you know, if the bar looks like a candy bar, it tastes like a candy bar, there's enough sugar in it. Okay, well, that may not be the best option. And so there are so many brands out there now that are about quote unquote cleaner labels or using more whole food options into their bars or into their products. So I think that that is looking at an ingredient list to see maybe what's there. And then looking at that food, your nutrition facts label to say, okay, is there protein? Is there fiber? Wow, there's a lot of added sugar. There's times where, you know, I always say, like, be careful. I had someone tell me, that bar is a lot of sugar. Well, the bar was made with dates. I'm like, okay, that is very different than just adding sugar to a product. So there's some confusion there, I think, sometimes for people. So you are more looking at added sugars when you're looking at an ingredient list or looking at a food label. And, you know, the other thing I'll encourage people, like, if you are grabbing on the go or whatever that is, like, it may not always be able to be perfect. So I have a colleague, and she always says, choose your sugar by the company that it keeps. And so if your sugar, there's a little bit to sweeten it, but it's all, this product has protein and healthy fat and all of the, it's a nut-based bar. Okay, well, that's probably a better option than sugar in a Pop-Tart, you know, or whatever that is. Right. So a lot of that is just kind of weighing out those different things and assessing that product, especially if it's a snack food product, for the fiber, the protein, the added sugars. I would say those are some of the main things to look at.
Yeah. And I think some of these companies, you know, you read on the back of the nutrition labels, they can get kind of tricky with how they word things. Like I'll see like brown rice syrup and I'm like, you know, on paper, that sounds good, but I think that's just sugar, isn't it? Like, isn't that just corn?
Yeah, it's definitely sugar. There are, if I could give you a list for all the things that mean sugar, people would roll over. It's crazy. So that goes back to that, choose a whole food where you can, right? And then add in, so let's say I'm having, you know, a Greek yogurt and I'm having, you know, let's say some raw carrot sticks, and I'm going to put a little bit of granola in my Greek yogurt. Okay. Well, like I have like protein, I have a vegetable. So a little bit of granola, even if it has a little sugar, is kind of minuscule in relationship to the bigger picture of that snack or that meal. Cause it can be very confusing, and there's words, you know, that people just have no idea what it means. And I think sometimes trying to decipher an ingredient list, unless you have a degree in science, can be challenging for people. So, you know, I think most of us get kind of general healthiness. So trying, you know, even if it's something you think is a little more processed, try to pair it with like a more whole food. And then again, that's balancing out the health and nutrition of that snack or that meal.
And of course, you know, we're in the holiday season here, so there's going to be a lot more room for desserts and sweets and pastries and all these sort of things. So, you know, what is the level of importance of balance, you know, in your diet for anybody, whether that's you're an athlete or just, you know, weekend warrior, every day, 9-to-5-er, you know, the importance of having cheat days and being aware that, you know, not to be too hard on yourself or too restricting on yourself on a day-to-day basis.
So my rule of thumb is to try to live by the 80-20 rule. So the 80-20 rule says that 80% of the time you do what you're supposed to do, eat for your goal. So eating whole grains, fruits, vegetables, lean proteins, healthy fats, all of these things that are going to help you maintain a healthy weight. If you're an athlete, be a better athlete, recover faster, you know, feel strong in your workouts. Then 20% of the time you can splurge on those foods that I'm not going to say are bad for you. I'm just going to say that are higher in sugar and fat and calories and possibly lower in nutrients. So if you think about that from a balance perspective, and I mean, I've worked with the most elite of the elite and the most average of the average. And so if you think about that, you can balance that out. Because the thing that I always want people to understand is there's always a birthday party. There's always a holiday or a vacation. So you've got to learn how to balance out these foods and items that you might really love with overall healthy eating. Because I mean, I think it's ridiculous to tell people don't eat dessert on Thanksgiving, whatever. I'm eating dessert on Thanksgiving. Right. That's going to fall into my 20%. And that 20% could look different for everyone. Like for the most part, for me, it's Friday and Saturday nights. I kind of want to splurge, eat a little more. You know, if I'm having dessert, I'm probably having it on Saturday night. But if someone has a married couple has date night on Wednesday, maybe Wednesday is a part of your 20%. So people have to figure out what that is for them. You mentioned cheat days, and I want to kind of touch on that because in the world of cheat days, you know, it's really interesting because people can often go overboard. So this is what I always tell people when you talk about the 20% or splurging, eat what you want, not everything you ever wanted. Because oftentimes for people, you'll tell them like, have a cheat meal, and they'll go a little bit overboard. But if you tell someone have a cheat day, maybe on the cheat meal, they'd eat two or three pieces of pizza and pair it with salad. You tell them have a cheat day, they eat the whole pizza. So, and for a lot of people, that can counterbalance the good that you did during the week. It doesn't take a lot of high calorie foods to balance good. So balance, but I think it's also about that mindfulness and enjoying the things that you enjoy, but trying to be satisfied with less. Like, do you need the whole bag of chips? Or is one serving of chips going to be okay? You know, they say after the third bite, you're really not even tasting it anymore. Right. So learning to enjoy those bites initially and then saying, okay, maybe that was good. And, you know, the beauty of the 80-20 rule is there's always 20% every week. I find that when people more deprive themselves, that's where they're more likely to go jump off a ledge and binge because they feel deprived. So if you can focus in on getting that balance on a regular basis, typically you don't feel as deprived, which really prevents you from going overboard on a regular basis.
Yeah. You know, I follow The Rock on Instagram. He's, you know, notorious about sharing his diets, and his cheat days, I think, are really, something to really see when he shares actually what he's eating. But, you know, it's almost misleading to a sense, because he's working out and consuming and burning so many calories that his caloric intake is probably way higher than the average person is.
100%. And you have to remember too, like as you age, and there are just sometimes you got to start like reining it in. There are some freaks of nature out there. I've worked with a lot of them. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't matter. Some of the professional athletes I worked with, it does not matter if they are eating cheeseburgers and French fries or chicken and kale. They are going to jump as high. They're going to run as fast. The Rock's kind of a freak of nature when it comes to the body. Most of us aren't like that. So, and we don't put in that amount of activity. We surely don't have that much muscle mass. And so trying to balance that out a little bit, and especially as we age, it becomes more and more difficult to maintain a healthy weight. You become at risk for other things. And so I think it's teaching yourself that balance. I always tell kids, like athletes, young athletes, like try to learn it now, because this body that you have is the same body you're going to have in 35 years. So we need to make sure that you are taking care of it to the best of your ability so that it lasts you for as long as you want it to.
Yeah, I think something, you know, speaking personally, I think a big change for me was when I realized that I used to eat for pleasure, and now I kind of eat for fuel, you know, and kind of treat my body more like a car. Like, you know, I don't always want to be running my car down to E, because that's not going to be, you know, beneficial for all the other parts that kind of work in line in that. So you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier in our conversations, but when you talk to maybe incoming NFL players or rookies or young college players who are realizing the difference between eating for pleasure and fuel, what are those conversations like?
So I'm going to tell you a great story, because when you mentioned the car analogy, I use it often, especially with guys, because they love cars. So I have this player come into the NFL. He's 22, DB, defensive back. Like, they're usually always, not always, because I also am friends with Troy Polamalu, and he's like the most non-DB DB that ever existed.
Yeah.
DBs are like riding, they're running hot all of the time. It's something. And they're not usually my best eaters. And so this guy, he told me, I just turned 23. He said, yeah, I'm going to start eating good when I'm 25. I was like, 25, huh? Why 25? He was like, I don't know. I can eat whatever I want right now. And so I asked him, so what's your favorite car? Whatever he said, I don't remember. And I said, cool. I said, would you go buy that car today and just beat the heck out of it for the next 2 years? And then in 2 years go, cool, today I'm going to start taking care of my car and taking it for checkups and paying it. He was like, oh, that's, he goes, that's something to think about. And I said, because that analogy of your body being a car, like the better quality fuel you put in your car, the more you take it to get checkups and all of these things, the better it's going to run, you know? And so that is an important, I think, analogy for them. And as I mentioned, especially like really talented athletes, it's hard sometimes to get them to get on board because, I mean, I worked with a wide receiver. And like I said, I don't care if he eats Skittles or if he eats chicken, sweet potato, and kale, he jumps as high. He's just one of those people. And so how can I teach him to want to eat, you know, chicken, sweet potatoes, and kale or whatever? And a lot of that is kind of letting them trial and error. And I had one and he said he eats fast food all the time. And he said, I've been eating better. He said, I went and had a burger and fries last night and it made me feel weird. And I said, excellent. So sometimes it's that letting them trial and error. And I always mm-hmm. tell them, or if they don't feel good or they're not recovering fast, I'm like, cool, just try it my way for a week. If my way sucks, we'll go back to your way. And they're like, okay. So a lot of that is putting it, you know, in their space, because the reality is, especially in professional sports, if you made it there, you're a good athlete. I mean, mm-hmm. you're a good athlete. If you're an elite college player, you're a good athlete. And so how can I help them understand that it's just not necessarily about how much you weigh or what you can eat? It's about how do you feel? And do you have energy when you get to practice? Are mm-hmm. you running, you know, gassing out before practice is over? Are you recovering slower? Are you, you know, feeling sore longer? Those are some of the spots that you can really start to get an athlete's head. I think you let mm-hmm. one of them get injured, tear an ACL. Oh, you have got a 100% attention athlete because they're saying, well, what do I do to get better? What can I eat? All of a sudden they're hyper-focused on it. So I think it's some of that, just trying to meet them where they are and just arguing against the fact that you still might jump as high, but could I help you jump as high longer? Or could I help you recover faster? Those are some of the key messages, I think, when you're talking to athletes.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting going back to what you had said earlier about, if you could improve your athletic performance by 10% just by being more hydrated or properly fueled, you know, in that pool where your peer group is getting smaller and smaller, the higher and higher you grow up, that's how you separate yourself, right? I mean, that's a great way that you can control separating yourself.
Exactly. And like, I might tell someone, okay, y'all all run this speed, but who runs this speed an hour and a half into the workout? And right. that's where you can see that. Or who, I don't care if you're the greatest player ever. If you cramp in the second quarter and have to come out and go get an IV, what good are you doing? And you know, what good are you doing? Because now you can't even play. It doesn't matter how high you can jump if you can't be on the field. And so it becomes a lot of that, you know, and that's one of the things I like to teach is that they're all elite players at that point. And I'm just saying, what could I make you a little bit better or a little bit stronger or have a little bit more energy? And that's where I think nutrition can come in. It is not going to solve every problem under the sun, but it can help a lot of things. And if athletes can take a hold of that and see how it can help them feel better, recover faster, et cetera, that's where I think you really get the buy-in and saying, okay, like I'm going to do this and I'm going to keep doing it. So it's an education process, sometimes longer than I would like it to be. But, you know, once they get a hold of it, a lot of them are like all in.
Now, last question here before we wrap things up. What are some good options to eat before competition, during competition, maybe for the youngsters out there, high school age kids, youth sport kids?
So pre-workout, pre-game, we typically are recommending eating like a full meal where you can. So 2 to 4 hours before a workout, that's going to have a good amount of carbohydrate, some protein, a little bit of vegetables, plenty of fluid. So at least 16 to 20 ounces of fluid. You know, if it's before just a practice, that could be a more complex snack. So it really kind of depends on what time you're training or what time you're competing. The goal is carbs, protein, and fluid. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you have an after-school practice, maybe you eat lunch at 12, practice starts at 4. Okay, well, that would be your spot to eat a good meal that's a carbohydrate, protein, plenty of fluid, a little bit of vegetables. Then maybe you have an extra snack. Maybe you're on the go and you have a protein bar and a fruit before you get to that workout. So the goal is that you're walking into that workout with as maximally fueled tank as you can, right? You don't want to go into a workout, back to the car analogy, with your tank half full. So I'm trying to maximize that during a workout, really the main goal is to stay hydrated. So the recommendation is 5 to 10 ounces about every 20-ish minutes during exercise, water and or sports drink. If you're going to be out there a lot longer than 60 to 90 minutes, a sports drink is going to be helpful to provide you with some carbohydrate as well as some electrolytes, which is going to be helpful because you are burning off carbohydrate when you're running and moving, and you are sweating out electrolytes with the fluid that you're losing. So trying to stay hydrated for those athletes that train long periods of time, like especially like your endurance athletes, runners or cyclists, you might need to insert some actual food. Like a lot of sports foods are what we use, like, you know, little bites of a bar or a goo or the little energy chews, those types of things. They're quick digesting carbohydrate, which means they're going to be quick digesting fuel to get to your muscles. For the people that are working out, you know, 60 minutes, you're probably fine. But lots of high school kids, you know, they'll leave one workout and go to the next workout. And so in that place, you really need to insert some nutrition. Or if they've been on a field for 2 hours and now they're going to lift, I'm like, well, let's eat a granola bar real quick before you get there. So again, trying to provide that optimal fuel. Post-workout goal is recovery. So I always like to say recovery has three R's: refuel, rebuild, rehydrate. So refuel means you need carbohydrate, rebuild means you need protein, rehydrate often obviously means you need fluid. And so we want athletes to get a snack within that 45 minutes after a workout. We call it the 2 hour window, which basically means in that 2 hours, your body is a little more primed to digest and absorb and quickly recover with carbohydrates and protein. So we say within 45 minutes, get a snack, but my rule of thumb is as fast as possible, because once you put nutrition into your body, whether it be from a beverage or a food, you kick your body out of catabolism, or as I like to call it, breakdown mode, and you get it into anabolism or recovering mode. And that's what, especially for athletes, we're trying to get them to that as quickly as possible. So that could be as simple as a smoothie, right? That maybe has milk and protein powder and fruit. Or if you have no protein powder, milk and Greek yogurt and fruit. That could be a milk or a chocolate milk. That could be a ready-to-drink shake that's got carbohydrate and protein. It could be, you know, a granola bar and beef jerky. You know, it could be a protein bar and a sports drink. So while there's some things that we deem the most optimal, there's a lot of foods that can fit. And for a lot of athletes, it's the convenience factor right after a workout. So can I find a chocolate milk? Can I find a protein shake? What can I get in as quick as possible? And that's usually what we're looking for in regards to getting the carbs, the protein, and the fluid in after that workout.
All right. That's great. I'm taking some notes here because I'm going to use this and apply it to my own personal life as well. Because like I said, over the last 8 months or so, or since we've been going through the COVID shutdowns and everything, my one favorite thing, my one real hobby I've been able to do is go out and run in the summertime and go out to the gyms when they've been reopened and everything here. So that's been my one real hobby outside of the work from home, you know, staying in place rules here.
Don't you worry. You have a sports nutrition playbook headed your way. So all the little tips and tricks are in there for you. So
exactly.
It's finding the tips and then figuring out all the different foods that can fit or apply. And that's different for different people and what they like and what they prefer. So,
well, we're almost wrapped up here. I like to do this with all my guests here. So I didn't tell you about this ahead of time. This is called 5 questions that have nothing to do with sports or this term, nutrition in this sense here. So kind of off topic questions, lightning round. I'll ask you, come with the first thing that comes to mind.
All right.
So Thanksgiving, we're recording this before Thanksgiving here. What is your favorite Thanksgiving side?
My mom's vegetable casserole.
Oh, okay.
Like green beans, corn, and it's got like a creamy, it has like a soup and some sour cream in it. And then it's got a crunchy, crumbly, like cracker and cheese and butter topping.
Oh, nice. So that's definitely a cheat meal.
Yeah, she only makes it at Thanksgiving and Christmas. So those two times, I'm all in on the vegetable casserole.
That's great. You're elbowing out the siblings for first in line there, right?
Yes. I like it the most out of everyone, so that's really helpful. So she always makes me extra. I take it home with me after the holidays, usually.
Great. Leftovers. Can't beat that there. Again, Christmas right around the corner. What is your most memorable Christmas gift you've ever received?
Ooh, that I ever received. This is really hard because I'm not a real huge gift person. I like quality time. Mm-hmm. So I almost think like I automatically go to when I was right out of graduate school, my mom and dad for Christmas sent my sister and I to New York City. And so we got to spend like the week after Christmas there. So I would probably say that, because I really enjoy quality time more than I love actual things. So if you can give me a gift that includes quality time, like, I'm all in. So I would say my trip to New York City, I think I was 25 when we went. Super fun, super fun.
It's a great time to experience the city. I lived in Astoria for like, you know, went to college in Long Island and then lived in Astoria for 3 years right around that time, 24, 25, 26. So great time to experience the city.
Twice. I did New Year's there at age 25 and at age 30. So it was pretty fun. Yeah.
Were you down at Times Square or out someplace else?
I paid money and went to a party that was at a hotel in Times Square. I'm from Texas. Standing out in that cold weather. One year was the year they had that massive blizzard, and I don't care what it costs to be at a party in a hotel, I'm paying it. But it was super fun to see the ball drop and be there for the whole experience.
Yeah, I'm from Massachusetts. You couldn't pay me enough money to be out there. I've experienced cold winters. No way I would want to go out there. We're in the same boat there. So I know you finished up your book during the quarantine, but any other hobbies you picked up during these quarantines?
I'm going to be real honest with you. I've been working a whole lot. Oh, I will tell you a skill. It's not a hobby, but it's a skill. So I do food and nutrition TV segments on a regular basis. Typically, my body is in a TV studio doing those. I fly all over the country and do them. Now, obviously, if you haven't watched the news lately, no one is in TV studios. So I've had to learn to do them at home by myself with cameras and ring lights. And so B-roll. You know, usually you have a camera guy filming all your food up close. Yeah, that guy doesn't exist. So I'm the new camera girl. So I have learned to do B-roll of products and food and learned how to like make the salad, make the pizza with just your hands with a little tripod and all that. So I guess that's a hobby, but it's a new skill that I have learned during this COVID timeframe.
I love it. You're like a one-man broadcasting group here. I love one-woman broadcasting group here. Yeah.
Yeah. The first thing I will do in a TV studio is go hug the camera guys. That will be my first step. But yeah, you know, you never know when you might need these skills. And I learned how to work iMovie and to do my own videos and edit them. And so I can now edit my own people into nutrition videos. So it's proven to be a good skill.
It's not as daunting, right? I feel like it's kind of intimidating when you open iMovie or anything else for the first time. You're not really sure how everything works, but now it's definitely more manageable that way, right?
100%. I have the 25-year-old that works for me. Some teach me, so that's always helpful. They're I'm 45, so really helpful. They have a little knack for that, and then you do it enough, you get the hang of it.
Absolutely. What is your biggest pet peeve?
I would say incompetence. Like, I'm a very organized, like very on top of things person. And when people just naturally don't like pay attention to the details, that is one of the things I have to kind of bite my tongue at. Like, if I go order something and I'm like, put the dressing on the side, and they're like, okay, dressing on the side, and they bring the dressing on the salad, I'm like, what did you miss about put the dressing? I'm like, okay. So I would probably say like people not paying attention to the details is probably one of my biggest pet peeves, because I'm a detailed person. So it's something I have to have a lot of extra grace for.
I like that. Okay. I can definitely appreciate that. Now, of course, no movies have really come out to theaters, although I'm not sure if that's the case in Texas. But what was the last movie you watched and did you like it?
The last movie I watched? Wow. I don't even know. I will say this. I have a love for like the pastime of going to the movies and go to dinner and go to the movies. We did that when I was a kid and I loved it. I'm trying to think on the last one I watched. Apparently it's been a while. I was traveling a ton about leading into COVID. And so I don't even know if I know what movie I watched last, but I can answer you this. Last Christmas, which seems like it was yesterday, my mom and I, when I was visiting my parents, got all into the Hallmark Channel. We got into like at night, at like 9 o'clock every night, we turn on the movie. So if it is a movie, I know people don't like these, but the ones that have a good ending and you can just predict what's going to happen and it makes you feel good inside, those are my favorite movies. I can't remember the last one I've seen, but that's my favorite.
I think now those are probably, those should be like everybody's favorite movies, right? I think we all need a good feel-good story after 2020.
I love it. People are like, it's so boring. I'm like, I love it when there's a good ending and I feel good inside when it's over. That is my kind of movie.
So. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I like it. Well, that wraps up. You survived five questions that have nothing to do with sports. Sounds I think good. You flied with passed with flying colors there. Thank thank you, Amy, for taking the time out to speak with us today. I thought this was a very enlightening, entertaining conversation here. So I really appreciate that. Best of luck the rest of the way and have a happy holiday season. And for folks out there, if you want to learn more about Amy, you can visit her website, amygoodsonrd.com. Also there, you can check out her book, Sports Nutrition Playbook. And once again, you can follow our brands on Twitter at @coach_AD, @traincondition, @winninghoops, and myself at @WesleySykes_. And for our next episode, we'll be welcoming on an NBA champion, Gunnar Peterson, the strength and conditioning coach for the 2020 NBA champion Los Angeles Lakers. So you won't want to miss that one. But until then, sports fans, I'm Wesley Sykes, and thank you again for listening to Sideline Sessions. And thank you, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.